previously on Unsolved.
But police haven't ruled out other possibilities, like Michelle knowing an intruder if there is one. They are combing most of the city for leads, concentrating searches along the river. Police think she could have fallen into the water, gotten carried downstream, and possibly drowned.
From my memories, I do believe whoever came in my bedroom took her.
For the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I'm criminal justice investigative reporter Gina Barton. This is season 2 of Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. Mike Manders was out of town on October 13, 1981, the night his 2.5-year-old daughter Michelle went missing. But there was someone else at the house that night, Terry Mueller, who was friends with Michelle's mom, Jan. Jan and Terry met a couple of months before Michelle disappeared. And what happened was they were both applying for jobs at a nursing home. Terry, who has some intellectual disabilities, was having some trouble passing the test. And Jan was talking to her afterwards, kind of trying to comfort her, make her feel better about it. And in the end, Jan got a job offer and Terry didn't. And so Jan felt sorry for her and invited her to come out for coffee.
She seemed like a friendly person, and I hadn't met that many friends there myself. And I felt bad because she didn't get the job she wanted.
As Terry and Jan were getting to know each other, they both talked about their families. Jan told Terry about her 3 kids, Jennifer, who was 4, and Christopher, who was 6, and Michelle, who at that time was about 2, 2.5. And Terry, she was married to a man named Joe, so she told Jan all about her husband and her marriage. Terry and Joe didn't have any children, even though she wanted them.
She said she liked looking at other people's children because she didn't have any. And she goes, "Do you have pictures of your kids?" And I said, "No." I didn't think anything of it. She gave them back. I don't know what that was about. She just liked looking at the other people's children. She couldn't have any herself is what she said. Someone said, "Don't you think it's kind of odd?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, maybe some people who don't have children like seeing people pictures of other people's kids."
Even though Terry was head over heels in love with Joe, her parents did not like him. She had to sneak off to the courthouse to marry him because her parents were worried about the fact that he had a criminal record. They also thought that Joe might take advantage of the naivete that came with Terry's disabilities. Joe didn't make a good impression on Jan either. She suspected he was abusing her new friend.
I just felt sorry for Terry. That's what I made, became friends with her. That he was treating her that way. I thought she was fine when she was alone together with me. But when he got around, she was a completely different person.
At the time Michelle went missing, Terry and Joe were staying with Terry's cousin in Watertown. Jennifer, Michelle's older sister, doesn't remember too much about them.
I remember they lived by, it's called Tivoli Island, a little park in Watertown. And they lived in this house right by the park, and it was notorious for these ducks just being everywhere. You would go to feed the ducks, and I just remember being at their house, and there'd be like 20 ducks in their yard, and we'd feed them. But I don't remember them specifically, but I do remember going to their house, and there being, you know, a couple, and sometimes they would watch us time to time. But I don't remember like whether it was positive or negative interactions. But I just remember mostly being at their house and playing with the, you know, feeding the ducks all the time.
So the night Michelle disappeared, Terry and her husband Joe came over briefly, and then Joe left and said he would come and pick up Terry at around 10 o'clock. So he left about 8, and then Jan put the kids to bed, and by 10:30, Joe still wasn't back. Terry was on the couch. Jan went to sleep. Orville Kwame, who was a Watertown police detective, was able to confirm this story for me in a recent interview.
Jan said, told Terry she could just, you know, lay down and sleep. And they laid down. And to much of my knowledge, Jan did not know when Terry left. And Jan slept through until morning, which the neighbor upstairs said it was quiet that night. It was unusual.
The next morning, Terry was gone. She had left a note saying Joe picked her up shortly after midnight, around 12:15. Jan found the note when she woke up sometime after 7.
And shortly thereafter, I noticed Michelle was missing. So I asked Griffin and Jennifer if they'd seen her, and they said no.
The morning that Jan discovered that Michelle wasn't in her room, she went ahead and sent Chris to school. He was 6 years old, he was in first grade, and she didn't want him to see how panicked she was, to get nervous about the fact that his sister was gone. Jennifer was too young for school. She hadn't started yet, so she was home that morning.
I woke up the next morning with my mom basically screaming, Terry. I just remember when I initially woke up, she was immediately outside my bedroom. There was a hall closet, and she was in the hall closet basically just taking stuff and whipping it and throwing it. And you couldn't even communicate to her. She was kind of like in a trance, and she wasn't focused at all, at least not on me. I remember trying to get her attention, and I couldn't. And then she just kept, you know, like pushing me out of my, you know, all the way, and kept looking and kept saying, I can't find Michelle, I can't find Michelle.
Michelle disappeared the night of October 13th. After more than 2 weeks, the cops had only found one clue, Jan's purse. An officer found it about a block from the house, with everything inside it dumped onto the ground. Then, shortly before Halloween, the Watertown police chief held a press conference to announce a break in the case.
We have a statement from a 20-year-old female friend in the home that evening that she left Michelle out that evening.
Do you have any idea why?
No, we have no idea other than the fact that she maybe became annoyed because she had not been picked up at this time, and handed the girl the purse and just opened the door for her.
This girl was babysitting for Michelle?
No, she was visiting at the Amanda's home at the time.
Okay. Why hasn't it come up before this, do you think?
I don't know.
The name of the female friend Reynolds refers to hasn't been disclosed, and she is not presently in custody. There are no plans at this point to charge her with any crime, since the authorities are still trying to put the puzzle together.
Reporters were baffled by this turn in the investigation. Obviously, they wanted to know, why would somebody do something like that? In the middle of the night, in the rain, who lets a toddler out of the house? The other thing that was totally confusing is the police chief told the reporters that Terry gave Michelle her mother's purse, opened the door for her, and let her walk away. So why would somebody give a toddler her mother's purse? It just didn't make sense. At the time that the police chief had this press conference, he didn't tell the reporters Terry's name. He didn't tell them that Terry had intellectual disabilities, that she had schizophrenia, that she sometimes had delusions. And in fact, that same night, she had a delusion that as she opened the door for Michelle, somebody pushed her from behind. But when she turned around, no one was there. Basically, all the police chief said was, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, in response to all of the reporters' questions. I talked to Richard Reynolds, the police chief, recently, and he said he actually didn't know a lot of these things. He said that he hadn't talked to Terry personally, that one of the detectives talked to her, and he didn't even recall being told that she had any disabilities or that she had delusions. So a lot of time has gone by, but from what he says today, he really didn't know these things, and that's why he didn't reveal them.
I didn't realize that she had them. But then I never interviewed her, and then the detectives did. And I don't think they ever indicated that they thought she had a mental problem.
Watertown Detective Orville Kwame did talk to Terry, and he told me that early on, he recognized her limitations.
I would say that Joe and Terry were two individuals that were difficult to deal with just because of their personalities and level of awareness. And, you know, I don't want to say anything negative about anything else. It's just that their style of life was just not what we would normally expect. So in dealing with them, it was not like dealing with just the everyday citizens that you find in the community.
Because of Terry's disabilities, Detective Kwame had a hard time figuring out what to believe.
We knew certain facts in talking with people and running a timeline, what occurred at different times. And that kind of had to be the basis in which to evaluate what Joe and Terry had to say.
In the end, he came to believe Terry left the door open by mistake, rather than giving Michelle Jan's purse and letting her out. Because the house was so old, the lock was particularly hard to turn. Detective Kwame remembers a weird conversation he had with Terry about that.
In fact, Terry even said, and I recall this because I was somewhat, amazed or it caught my attention. She said she had trouble turning the lock with her fingers. So she used her mouth and her teeth to turn the lock.
From what the detective told me, Terry was in a rush to get to Joe and didn't want to keep him waiting, even though he was so late.
And I think she was pretty well attached to Joe. So her going out, she just could not close the door, because to close that door, she would have had to slam it hard. She would have had to pull it hard. And if she opened it and didn't re-engage the lock, it may have not have engaged at all. So that fits the whole picture of her leaving and the door being open and Michelle coming in and nobody's doing anything and her walking out the back door.
Terry's statement to the police that she opened the door for Michelle caused a turning point in the investigation. Up until that point, the police were working under two theories. One was she somehow got out of the house and wandered away. The other one was that she had been kidnapped. And the more time that went by, the more they were leaning toward the kidnapping. And in fact, after she had been gone for 6 days, they told reporters that they were certain she had been kidnapped. When Terry made that statement about opening the door, everything changed. Then they went back to she wandered away. This whole thing was some sort of accident.
And looking at the fact that she could have, you know, would have been outside at that time, her wandering down and falling in or walking in a river was the only conclusion we could come with.
And there's a quote from one of the Department of Justice reports that sums that up perfectly. It says, quote, "Primarily due to Terry Mueller's statement, the FBI withdrew most of their investigative resources from this investigation." So their decision about how to proceed was based largely on what Terry said, despite the problems with her credibility. Depending on how complicated the case is, the entire file for a single case can take up boxes and boxes. I wasn't able to get the entire case file on the investigation into Michelle's disappearance. We only have about 200 pages worth of records. After reading through those and talking with Detective Kwame, I was pretty confused. It was really hard to tell exactly what Terry had said back then, or how reliable it was. I felt like none of it would make sense unless I could talk to her myself. The first time I went to try to talk to Terry, I knocked on the door of a house and a man answered, and he said I couldn't talk to her because her caregivers were not there. They were at some sort of training. So he gave me his phone number and said that I should call first and try to set up a time to talk to her. And that really made me wonder what was going on. Why did she have caregivers? Was it due to her disability? Was she older now and she had had some sort of physical problems? I couldn't really figure that out. And he said she doesn't actually live in this house. She lives in the house up the hill. The second time I went to talk to Terry, Katie, my producer, and I went to the house at the top of the hill, and there was a woman standing outside with the dogs.
Hi, are you Terry? Hi, Terry, I'm Gina.
Hi, Katie, nice to meet you.
So, sorry to bother you and bother your dogs.
And we could tell right away that she was probably not living there on her own. So we told her we wanted to talk with her, and she said she would have to ask Pat. We had no idea who Pat was. She went ahead inside. She's asking Pat. The dogs are barking like crazy. Five dogs barking. And then Terry comes back out and says, well, Pat is sick and she doesn't want us to talk to you right now. And so then we had to ask her again, would you please ask Pat to come out here and talk to us so that we could tell her what we were trying to do. And Pat came out.
Hi, Pat. Hi, I'm Gina Barton. I'm a writer from Milwaukee. This is Katie.
Hello.
Hi.
We explained to Pat that we wanted to talk to Terry about what happened that night in 1981 at the Manders house. Pat had some reservations.
Okay. I have concerns about that.
Okay.
Okay, Terry has schizophrenia.
Okay.
And it don't take much to set her off the deep end.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was a very stressful point in her life.
Mm-hmm.
She got interviewed by the cops and stuff, and she kind of thinks that she... Okay, she's got vague memories because she... don't know if she opened the door and that's how the baby got out or what happened. I hear different things at different times, but I am concerned that this could send us back to the hospital.
Oh, I definitely don't want that to happen.
No, me neither, because I have to stay with her.
You're her sister? Or
no.
Just
no.
Like family to her?
My sister, Rita, next door, and I are her guardians.
Oh, okay.
And
I kind of thought she was going to tell us to go away, but she didn't.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Well, you come in, we'll talk. If she starts getting stressed, I'm just going to ask you to leave.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
And so we agreed to that, of course. And we get inside and we realize it's a group home where Terry's living. There are probably a half a dozen people with disabilities living there. And there's also a little kid running around. So the TV was going. People were yelling out. They were asking for drinks of water. The little girl is trying to play with dolls.
What dress does Cinderella like?
What color?
Which color does she like?
She likes red.
She likes red? Is there a red dress over there for her? Let's see.
But at the same time, I've been in a lot of group homes, and this one really did seem to be full of love. And Pat, the caregiver, was treating the residents like they were her children. And I could see why Terry was comfortable there. So for part of the time, I asked Terry some questions. And then for part of the time, Pat actually asked her the questions. And it seems like that maybe got to the information we were looking for. I was kind of reticent to ask some of the tough questions because I didn't want to upset Terry. And so then Pat asked them and Terry answered them. We discovered that Terry not only suffers from schizophrenia, but also from PKU, a metabolic disorder that can cause brain damage if it isn't caught in time. And that's what happened to Terry.
Well, she needs help with dealing with her finances. So she'll just buy something to buy it. Money burns a hole in that girl's pocket faster than anybody I know. She'll buy 40 backpacks and fanny packs.
Oh, I love fanny packs.
Meeting Terry really made us question the investigation even more. She doesn't seem like the kind of witness who should have dictated what the police did next in terms of Michelle's case. In the police reports and in interviews with people who knew Terry back in 1981, people seemed to be downplaying her disabilities. They were like, well, she has some limitations, but she's basically coherent, and she's absolutely sure she opened the door for Michelle that night. But after meeting her, I wouldn't describe her that way. During our conversation, she was not particularly focused. even though she seemed eager to help us with the story. It's clear that Terry trusted Joe, even though the people around her didn't think she should.
I thought I was in love with him, I really did.
Yeah.
He mingled with everybody, my friends, my family. He wanted to be part of my whole family, you know, get together and stuff. Mm-hmm. There was a time when we got stuff from my dad, like money and stuff. He's always there. My mom said, don't give him any money, don't give him money. I won't.
You did.
He gave me $500 so I can do what I want with it. And but just do not give money to Joe. Okay, I won't. But I paid about $200 on a stereo. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. And we lived on Broadway Terrace. We lived everywhere. He kept moving. What the hell are you moving for?
In cars.
No, this is...
Had to live in a car for a while.
Yeah, he did, because he had no place.
It's easy to see why Terry's parents would be worried about Joe taking advantage of her. Pat says they were concerned that he only married Terry so he could get his hands on her Social Security checks.
He made me lie to them. I don't want to be honest, but he made me lie to them so I can get on it.
Yeah. And then he used money himself.
Yep.
Oh, man.
I had to pay for his gas. I had to pay for our food and stuff and our rent and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money, dude.
When we talked to Terry, she had trouble remembering basic things about the night Michelle disappeared. She wasn't even sure if she was awake or asleep when Joe finally came to pick her up more than 2 hours late.
Did he ever tell you what happened or, like, why he didn't pick you up? I asked him that.
He didn't tell me. I kept calling him. I'll come. And he didn't come.
So when he actually got there, were you asleep? Or you were just waiting for him to
come? I was just waiting for him to call me. Yeah. And Jan Mandy was sleeping. Mm-hmm. And the kids were sleeping too. They didn't want to wake him up.
Right.
When Pat asked Terry about that night, Terry initially said she opened the door for Michelle. But seconds later, she said she didn't remember what happened.
I do remember. I left her out. I know that.
You left two out.
I think I left the baby. I'm not too sure. I do not know. That's what the problem is. I don't know.
It seems to me that at this point, it's not possible for Terry to recount what happened the night Michelle went missing with any sort of accuracy. Pat told us that Terry's levels of functioning kind of wax and wane, and she's in a particularly good place right now. So I doubt she would have been more clear about things during all the stress that was caused by Michelle's disappearance. After spending some time with Terry, my producer and I really couldn't figure out why the investigators on Michelle's case would base their actions on what she said. At the end of the interview, Terry was very interested in how our recording equipment worked, so she was talking to Katie about that. And she gave Katie this huge hug at the end and almost didn't want to let go of her. The thing that really struck us is that Terry still seemed scared of Joe. She didn't seem scared of us, but I think she also seemed scared that maybe somebody would blame her for what happened to Michelle. And she really didn't want that. She wanted us to know that she's a good person, that she loves kids, that Joe, her ex-husband, was the guy who was mean and who, if anybody did anything to Michelle, it was probably him.
You're fine, yeah, Terry. You don't have to cry. Okay, if I thought you were going to hurt a baby, you would not be here, because I have babies all the time.
After Terry talked with the investigators, the FBI pretty much pulled out of the investigation. And it seems like what she said also played a part in the investigators' decision not to follow up on what Michelle's sister said about seeing a man in their room that night. Detective Kwame's reports no longer exist, but when I spoke with him, he didn't seem to think Jennifer's statement was much of a clue. He suspected she was confused, and she had actually seen Joe in the bedroom, but earlier in the evening, when he dropped off Terry.
I don't have reports, and I don't remember. Maybe it was Jennifer said something about Joe fixing a light. I don't recall. call that, and for some reason I've always understood that it was Joe, but I may have been mistaken.
Unfortunately, Terry couldn't clarify that point when we talked to her either.
So you don't remember if he actually came in?
No, I don't.
Because one of the other sister said she remembers a man coming in her room.
Oh, then that could be Joe then.
It could be. But if you don't remember that...
No, I don't.
Today, Jennifer isn't sure whether the man she saw was Joe or someone else. But she's adamant about one thing. He came into the room in the middle of the night while she and Michelle were asleep.
I never believed the story that she wandered away and drowned. I mean, that's just very unrealistic.
Next time on Unsolved. Norbert Kraszewski started out as an investigator for an insurance company. After more than 10 years of doing that, he became a private detective and started his own agency.
Somehow, I don't recall how it was, but Norbert had apparently come across these women from Black Earth that allegedly had seen Michelle in a restaurant there with an older couple.
They were very rough with her. They were not kind to her.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. Support our independent investigative work by subscribing to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find the latest offers at jsonline.com/subscribe. You can find more online at jsonline.com/unsolved. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Unsolved is reported by me, Gina Barton, and produced by Katie O'Connell. The project was edited by Greg Borowski, with web design by Aaron Coy, photos by Mark Hoffman, graphics by Lou Saldivar, and video by Lou Saldivar and Bill Schultz. Our copy editor was Debbie Davis, with social media outreach by Emily Risto. Andrew Malika worked on interactive graphics. The news reports you heard in this episode came from WISC TV News 3 and WMTV NBC 15, both in Madison.